the Aquarius talking with the Odyssey, Lovell talking with Swigert back in the command module. Still trying to stabilize the two ships.
Someone's looking for a flashlight. They want to cut off everything that's using electrical power. And they've got to get it fixed. They've got to get a navigational fix because the ground's not too sure where they are. The ground has a fix on them, but it's within a couple of hundred miles, and that's not good enough when you're plotting a course to return to Earth. Lovell, if he can get a sextant fixed, will plot it down to a couple of hundred feet.
I'm not doing any good here. Aquarius, Houston, you're watching the
Aquarius.
Go ahead, Aquarius.
Okay, go ahead with the breakers first, Jack.
Okay, you watching your middle gimbal there?
It'll tell me off. You have to just straight pitch down, Jim.
Straight pitch down, they're tumbling. I hope
okay,
you notice how cool and collected these three men are. When you talk about three professional test pilots, here they are. They're in the same kind of spot that Armstrong and Scott were in on Gemini 8.
Okay, Fred, I've got six circuit breakers for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, they're all on panel 11. Roll one under AC bus B. Open helium PQGS for propellant display. Row 2, flight displays, open thrust, open mission timer, open range rate, altitude rate, and open AC bus A, range rate, altitude rate.
They're open. They're all open.
Okay, and row 4, pings, signal strength display.
All of this is to assist in the electrical lineup.
Okay, that's concludes the power down of displays, and I have a P-30 pad for you.
Open means in effect disconnect, and they're trying to make sure that the only power being utilized at the moment is the power serving the automatic pilot
the
system and the computer.
The purpose is a Paracentian plus 2 hours depth support, round 33, 079er. 252648 plus 16330 minus 00145 minus 07515.
I'm going to override these numbers. I know you think it's unfair, but I think I'd better say that what they're planning right now with the three astronauts is to use the descent propulsion engine of the moon lander at 69 miles of altitude over the moon tomorrow night to fire away from the moon and head home. They are talking about Paracentian. That's the lowest altitude they can reach without further power from here in over the moon, and they will reach it behind the moon. It was originally planned at 69 miles. We'll have to find out if they're anywhere near that because they don't know at the moment. But using the descent propulsion engine of the lunar lander would send both ships headed home from that altitude around the moon, and it would be done behind the moon. I beg your pardon, wait a minute. Yes, it would. 2 hours. They said Paracentian plus 2 hours would mean it would be done behind the moon tomorrow night.
Right now, however, we want you to go with pitch 5.86.
They're still trying to get an exact fix on the position of Apollo 13, its course toward the moon, and its closest approach to the moon, because its approach to the moon on its present course without rocket power will determine when and where they fire this descent engine in order to head home. They will not make a moon landing. DPS abort means head home. Forget it. And they've got another situation here, which I'm going to ask for a figure on. The last figure I heard was they were about 175,000 miles from Earth. Have you heard anything later, Bob Walker?
200. That's the latest I heard, though.
Which means they're about 24,000, 26,000 miles from the moon.
+16330-00145-07515.
That's Hayes ringing back that computer setup for the automatic operation tomorrow night.
268-264-16410-00145-07330.
Just to show you how complex this is.
We lose the water in the flash A in the car.
On a normal approach to the moon, they'd go around behind it and use a braking rocket thrust to go into lunar orbit to stay around the moon. Now they have to coast into orbit around the moon, and they will pick up speed doing so more than they intended.
Aquarius, here's the second.
Therefore, they have to use that speed plus the speed they can get out of this descent propulsion system, the lunar lander engine, to get home. And if you remember correctly, Apollo 8 did not have this engine. Had it been in this situation, it would not have been able to get home.
Why the hell are we maneuvering at all now? Are we still
we're about to start the news conference in Houston.
Well, we're at home for one thing. I mean,
four men are seated at table now at the Mayan Spacecraft Center. Let's go now to that news conference.
The voice speaking from Houston, and we're switching over, I believe, will be Brian Duff, the public affairs officer at the Mayan Spacecraft Center in Houston, introducing the speakers. And the first speaker from the news conference in Houston on this situation is apparently going to be astronaut James McDivitt, who is sitting in the middle of the table. To his right is Deputy Manned Spacecraft Director Christopher Kraft.
And here is Chris Kraft of NASA.
Accident with the in the region of the fuel cells and the oxygen tanks. We have not tried too much to reconstruct the what has happened because we were more concerned at the moment for getting the situation under control.
Hello.
As you have seen, we've begun to use the limb as a device for keeping oxygen in both the command and service command module and the lunar module, and we're using the power system from the lunar module. It appears at the present time that everything is under control and that we have a safe situation at the moment. I think Colonel McDivitt may want to give you some more details on the systems, and Mr. Schoberg could certainly talk about the operations plans that are going on at the present time in the control center.
All right, Chris. The really other spacecraft configured right now is with the CSM powered down completely. Before we powered it down, we were able to isolate the surge tank and the emergency repress tanks in the in the command module. These provide oxygen for reentry, so we have a command module that has oxygen for reentry. It has the reentry batteries, it has pyro batteries, and all the systems that are in the command module. Our malfunction apparently occurred in the bay, which includes the hydrogen tanks, the oxygen tanks, and the fuel cells. And was in no way connected with anything with the command module. We should be able to provide power, electrical power, from the LEM for the return voyage to Earth. We should be able to return on the oxygen within the LEM. And both the command module and the lunar module. We can still power the command module from the lunar module at low power levels through the wiring, which is normally used to power the LEM from the command module. So we expect that we'll be using a dual spacecraft mode from now until the time that we get back to Earth. We'll be firing the LEM engine at some time later to accelerate our return voyage, and I think Sue could probably comment on that best.
The minimum return to Earth time, this would be a total flight duration, would be about 133 hours, That would result in a landing in the Atlantic. One option we have. A second option would be to go to the Mississippi line. That would take about 142 hours total flight duration. The burns to get you back would be made at about.
For Jimmy Stewart or anyone who wants to ask, how much electrical life power at lifetime do we have in the LEM, and how much oxygen lifetime? How long do we have?
Mark, it depends upon how we use it. Obviously, we have four batteries in the descent stage of the LEM with 400 amp hours each. We have two batteries in the ascent stage with 296 amp hours each. If you rough that out quickly, it says we can use power at about 25 amps. Stay current until we get back. Now, we'll have to arrange the electrical profile so that we can bring up the systems to perform the dock DPS maneuver, and then we'll power down to minimum levels and go on like that. When I left, we had an ample power supply to do the whole mission, but we were still roughing it out and trying to get in a configuration which we knew. Oxygen, we have 48 pounds of oxygen in the LEM descent tanks, which is more than adequate to do the mission. We also have a couple pounds in the LEM ascent tanks. I think I said descent. Descent tank has 48 pounds. The ascent tanks have about a pound or so.
The point is that we have locked up the CSM systems to preserve that spacecraft for reentry, both in terms of power and oxygen.
It would be to go to the Mississippi line. That would take about 142 hours total flight duration. The burns to get you back would be made at about.
For Jimmy Stewart or anyone who wants to ask, how much electrical life power at lifetime do we have in the LEM, and how much oxygen lifetime? How long do we have?
Mark, it depends upon how we use it. Obviously, we have four batteries in the descent stage of the LEM with 400 amp hours each. We have two batteries in the ascent stage with 296 amp hours each. If you rough that out quickly, it says we can use power at about 25 amps. Stay current until we get back. Now, we'll have to arrange the electrical profile so that we can bring up the systems to perform the dock DPS maneuver, and then we'll power down to minimum levels and go on like that. When I left, we had an ample power supply to do the whole mission, but we were still roughing it out and trying to get in a configuration which we knew. Oxygen, we have 48 pounds of oxygen in the LEM descent tanks, which is more than adequate to do the mission. We also have a couple pounds in the LEM ascent tanks. I think I said descent. Descent tank has 48 pounds. The ascent tanks have about a pound or so.
The point is that we have locked up the CSM systems to preserve that spacecraft for reentry, both in terms of power and oxygen. So it is sufficient to support entry.
The lodge is completely intact. There's no problem with it at all.
I wonder if we can expand a little more on the possibility of an Atlantic Ocean landing and what the recovery posture is for the Atlantic.
For an Atlantic landing, we would have airplanes with parajumpers on the scene at the time of landing. We're presently surveying that area of the Atlantic. It's about 20 or 25 degrees south, and about I think it's about 25 or 30 degrees west longitude. And we're presently surveying the area for ships of opportunity. But we do not have a planned recovery ship in that area, as you know.
Let me follow up on that. Would you say that now it seems a great deal more likely that you'd go for 142 hours and the Pacific, where you have recovery capability?
I think that's a good possibility, but I'd like to reserve judgment until I see what happens in the next hours. We have some 18 or 19 hours until that burn has to be made, so I think we certainly be watching the situation. The Pacific is a lot better from the standpoint that we have a ship there. It's better from a network standpoint. So it's a preferred place, even though it might take a little longer.
Chris or Jim, can you tell us where the three astronauts are and how they will be living in their return to Earth?
Well, when I left, I think that Jack Swigert was still in the command module, and Jim and Fred were in the LEM. And I think that they'll be living between the two spacecraft until they return. Sometime before reentry, of course, the three of them will return to the command module and put the hatch back in and jettison the service module.
I'd guess that the two of them would sleep in the CSM while the other one stayed awake in the limb. I would guess that they'll probably go to some kind of shift like that.
Yeah.
How are they going to be getting oxygen and heat in the command module? From the limb?
We're going to be running one environmental control system or the other. Initially, we'll be running a limb system. That's what we're running right now. Now, intermittently, we'll run the CSM system to make sure that we keep the atmosphere in the limb free of carbon dioxide. So we'll be alternating. That's why I say there'll be people in both spacecraft.
Picture over here with the thing. On the far side. Right there, yeah.
Yeah, well, somebody explain to me what you mean by a ship of opportunity in the Atlantic. Is that some merchant ship or Russian sub that happens?
It could be a merchant ship. It could be... I suppose it could be a foreign nation's naval vessel, any of that kind of thing.
You mean any ship in the Atlantic?
Yes, sir.
Right here.
Chris, has this abort situation or altered trajectory ever been run on simulators in just this way?
Oh, yes. Many times we run all kinds of abort situations. And if you recall, in Colonel McDivitt's flight, we actually burned the DIPS engine attached to the command and service module. The autopilot in the lunar module is designed to carry out the maneuver under those circumstances. That is, the digital autopilot to damp the oscillations of the combined spacecraft. We are looking even at the possibilities of dropping the service module, but that particular type of maneuver has not been tested in flight, and we'd have to make ourselves certain that we could control the spacecraft under that kind of CG and inertia condition. So yeah, that's kind of unlikely that we would do that. If we did that, it would give us that much more delta D, you see, because we'd get rid of quite a bit of weight from the CSM.
Chris, Strickland?
Chris or Jim, if you've got a situation where the limb oxygen system can provide like 50-plus hours for two guys, how do you equate that with 146 hours return if you don't have any kind of environmental control operation in the command module right now?
Normally, on the lunar surface, we plan on three lunar surface repressurizations. It actually has enough for four. Now, there's about 6.6 pounds of oxygen per repressurization required in the... And the limb leak rate is about 0.08 pounds per hour. The metabolic rate is a little bit, and we're using probably 0.2 pounds per hour, so we've got quite a large margin there.
Okay, you recharge the plissons also.
Pardon?
Let's get this straight if we can. You're
saying you use 0.2 pounds per man per hour?
A better number is 6 to 8 pounds for the three men per day.
6 to 8 pounds per hour.
Correct, and yeah. That plus what you might have for...
you have to take in that cabin leakage, too.
Right. If I can follow up here just a second. Have you got enough oxygen to get them back safely?
Yes.
All right, over here.
According to the press handouts, the Navy's got a standby task force in the Atlantic to recover if necessary. You wouldn't go to this? You'd go to the Ship of Opportunity, emergency ship if necessary?
We don't have a U.S. Navy recovery ship in the Atlantic.
Is it deemed necessary for this mission?
It was not deemed necessary for this mission.
Where was the Atlantic recovery point again, geographically, if you could? And the Pacific.
This is rough, Paul, but it's something like 20 to 25 degrees south latitude, and I think it's about 30 degrees west longitude.
Just below the point of South America there, Paul.
The bulge. In that area.
Due south of that.
You mentioned that you should be able to generate around 25 amps per hour, and you have to divide that out against the loads. Will there be sufficient power for the transponders so that you can get a good track on the spacecraft?
I will be able to bring them up.
This is Colonel Jim McDevitt.
I believe that we will have that kind of power. I really don't have that close a handle on the power. We came over here before we had all those details worked out to that level.
As long as with the Omnis and the 220-foot dishes, I don't think we'll have any problem there.
Also, I appreciate that you haven't been able to give any thought to what caused all this, but there
I was looking through the transcript, and there were certain problems with the O2 tanks and the cryo temperatures and problems with fan cycling and stratification. Because this, apparently one of the tanks was oscillating very rapidly in temperature, and this was noted earlier today. Does this give you any thought of what might have happened?
No, not yet. Stratification is something that typically happens in these tanks, and it's nothing that we haven't seen before. Right now, I have absolutely no clue to what happened. We had something...
It was pretty widespread, we know.
Rather violent happened in Bay 4, we think. Something happened to the fuel cells in the oxygen tank, and they were down in that area. It was a rather violent kind of thing because it apparently reset some of the check valves in the RCS quads, which are susceptible to shock. But as far as what exactly happened, I have no idea.
Chris, are you confident that you have enough power under the current configuration to bring the power back in?
Yes, but I think we'll have to be very frugal in how we use it, and that's what you've probably heard some of the discussions back and forth between the crew. We were trying to consider whether we would keep the platform up, for instance, between now and the time you go behind the moon, in order to maintain that alignment so that they wouldn't have to do another alignment when they get ready to do the burn on the dips and so on. So it will have to be very carefully used between here and Spock.
And how do you feel in point of concern between now and Gemini 8?
Well, I guess I would have to say I feel a great deal more concerned. We're still something like 70 to 80 hours away from the Earth. And in Gemini 8, we were never more than an hour and a half to get to a recovery point and never more than 20 minutes to land.
Carl, if I can back a little bit this way here. At the time that you left, what was the situation with regard to venting to the outside and motions of the spacecraft from that? Was there any?
I don't know. I can't recall.
The venting had been decreasing, and if we were leaking probably from that bay, and it looked like the pressures were all dropping, so I would assume that the venting had gone down, but it was a little difficult to tell from the conversation. I would assume that the venting had decreased considerably.
And you were not getting any particular rates anymore at the time you were leaving?
Not that I recall. I think they had the LEM RCS system up, and so it would be difficult to tell even then whether they did have any rates.
They were transitioning from one spacecraft control system to another and running back and forth through the tunnel and aligning the platform. There's an awful lot of activity going on, and we didn't ask them what the rates were.
I believe I heard Fred Hayes mention that it might be considered to use a deep space abort in order to immediately get the burn over with and power down the LEM so you wouldn't have that drain in keeping it powered up till they get around the moon. Has this been completely disregarded now?
We can't. The position we are now on the Earth-Moon plane, we have to go around the moon to get back if we're going to use the DIPS engine. You would have had enough capability with the SDS engine, but of course we don't dare use that now. So we have to go to the back side of the moon and come back.
I have a question in three parts. First of all, if they do choose the Pacific method of recovery, will the recovery point be changed from original planning, or will it still be the same?
I think it's moved west and south some. I think it's about 165 degrees west and some 20 degrees south. It is farther south and farther west than the end of mission plan.
Would this... The other two questions kind of combined. If you did land in the Atlantic and you did have to go to a ship of opportunity, would you hesitate at all to ask any ship of any nation?
No, sir, I wouldn't.
And will this necessitate future thinking toward a backup recovery fleet in the Atlantic?
We'll certainly go reassess that, yes, sir. Go to the back there.
Chris, will you come in at 400K, and will there be any problem in jettisoning the LEM entry? What
done,
will be that mechanics?
It's done the same way as it is around the moon, and the same way coming back from the moon with the service module. You have pyrotechnic batteries and separate pyrotechnic lines, electrical sources, which are dependent only on those power sources. So
we don't have any problems there in terms of separation. Now, the dynamics, mechanics of the thing would not be a problem either.
For Jim McDivitt, is a situation like occurred in Bay 4 something that might have occurred if it was hit by a meteoroid? And for Chris Kraft, in following up your earlier comments, do you feel they have a good chance to make it back?
You asked me first. There was something which appeared to be quite violent that occurred in Bay 4, and yes, if you were struck by a meteor, it would be quite violent. I'm not assuming that's what happened, Mark, but that could have done it.
Yes, I think their chances are excellent.
That's the first admission from anyone that something violent happened to Apollo 13 tonight to cause this emergency. That was made by Jim McDivitt. It wasn't flat, but it's the first admission by anyone.